In the quiet coastal town of Sakuronomi, a middle school teacher's grief transforms into calculated revenge, forever changing the lives of her students. Kanai Minato's Confessions exploded onto Japan's literary scene in 2008, selling over 3 million copies and earning multiple prestigious awards, including the National Booksellers Award. This psychological thriller was later adapted into an Academy Award shortlisted film by acclaimed director Tetsuya Nakashima. What began as Minato's debut novel, written between household chores as a homemaker and former home economics teacher, became a cultural phenomenon that captivated readers worldwide with its unflinching exploration of revenge, justice, and the darkest corners of human nature. Even celebrities like Natalie Portman have praised its chilling psychological insight that rivals the works of Camus, calling it impossible to put down once you've started. Yuko Moriguchi stands before her middle school class on the last day before spring break, appearing to deliver a routine farewell speech. Instead, she calmly announces her retirement and then drops a bombshell. Her four-year-old daughter Manami's death at the school pool wasn't an accident as reported. It was murder committed by two students sitting in that very classroom. Though she refers to them only as Student A and Student B, her descriptions make their identities unmistakable to everyone present. The classroom falls silent as Moriguchi methodically deconstructs the crime. Student A, 13-year-old Shuya Watanabe, a scientific prodigy desperate for recognition, had created a modified coin purse that delivered an electric shock. Student B, Naoki Shitamura, a lonely, insecure boy seeking acceptance, had helped lure little Manami to the pool with the promise of a cute, snuggly bunny pouch, supposedly a gift from her mother. When the child touched the rigged zipper, she collapsed unconscious. What happened next reveals the true horror. Believing Manami dead from the shock, Naoki panicked and pushed her unconscious body into the pool, making her death appear accidental. The truth Moriguchi now reveals to the stunned class is that the electric shock wasn't lethal. Manami was still alive when she entered the water. Had Naoki simply run away, she would have eventually regained consciousness. As the students process this shocking revelation, Moriguchi delivers her final lesson. She won't report the boys to the police. Not out of mercy, but because she doesn't trust the juvenile justice system to deliver appropriate punishment. Instead, she announces her own form of justice. She claims to have contaminated the milk cartons of both boys that morning with blood from Manami's HIV-positive father. With clinical detachment, she suggests they get tested in a few months, leaving them to contemplate their mortality just as her daughter's was stolen from her. The classroom sits in stunned silence as Moriguchi gathers her belongings and walks out the door, leaving behind a ticking time bomb of fear, guilt, and revenge that will detonate in ways no one could anticipate. When classes resume after spring break, the atmosphere in Class 2B has transformed completely. With Moriguchi gone, a new teacher named Terada, nicknamed Werther by the students for his emotional nature, struggles to control a classroom where the social hierarchy has been violently upended. Shuya Watanabe, student A, attends school but faces relentless bullying from classmates who now know his role in Manami's death. Meanwhile, Naoki Shitamura, student B, has disappeared into complete isolation, refusing to leave his bedroom. Mizuho, a studious class representative with her own complex motivations, observes these changes with keen interest. She notices how Shuya endures the daily torment, classmates throwing milk at him, writing murderer on his desk, and physically assaulting him, with an almost detached acceptance. Rather than breaking under the pressure, he seems to retreat further into his scientific pursuits, working obsessively on a new invention, a wristwatch-like lie detector. When Mizuho approaches Shuya about his invention, she discovers a boy desperate for connection, yet fundamentally disconnected from normal human emotion. He demonstrates the device on her, showing how it detects subtle changes in pulse when someone lies. For the first time, he opens up about Manami's death, crying as he explains his desperate need for recognition. "I just wanted someone to notice me." Yet even as tears stream down his face, the lie detector mysteriously activates, suggesting something more complex beneath his apparent remorse. Meanwhile, Werther grows increasingly concerned about Naoki's continued absence. Despite his mother's assurances that he's suffering from autonomic ataxia, Werther suspects something more sinister. When he and Mizuho visit Naoki's home, they find his mother wearing long sleeves despite the summer heat, possibly hiding bruises, and Naoki completely unreachable, locked away in his bedroom. The visit triggers catastrophic consequences. The next day, news breaks that Naoki has murdered his mother. In the aftermath, Mizuho confronts Werther while secretly having him wear Shuya's lie detector. She exposes the teacher's self-serving motives for visiting Naoki, not genuine concern, but a desire to be seen as a heroic educator, suggesting to police that Werther's persistent harassment pushed Naoki to violence. In this transformed classroom, no one is innocent, no one is trustworthy, and everyone has their own version of justice they seek to enact. The seeds of revenge Moriguchi planted have begun to bear their poisonous fruit, with consequences more far-reaching than anyone could have imagined. In the stifling confines of his bedroom, Naoki Shitamura's world has collapsed into a nightmare of paranoia and delusion. After Moriguchi's announcement, he retreated from school, convinced that his classmates would kill him for murdering their beloved teacher's daughter. His mother, desperate to protect her son, enables his isolation, telling the school he suffers from autonomic ataxia while bringing him meals and manga to sustain his self-imposed imprisonment. What begins as fear transforms into something more disturbing. Believing he's HIV positive and facing imminent death, Naoki experiences a strange emotional awakening. He cries frequently, not from sadness, but from the intensity of experiencing life while facing mortality. Simple pleasures, his mother's cooking, sunlight through his window, even bean cakes he previously hated, take on profound significance. "I savored each moment," he recalls, knowing they might be my last. This twisted serenity shatters when his new teacher Werther and classmate Mizuho begin making weekly visits, bringing class notes and encouragement to return. Rather than seeing their concern, Naoki perceives them as Moriguchi's spies, coming to monitor or even kill him. His paranoia intensifies when he overhears his mother complaining about Moriguchi to Werther. He throws a dictionary at her, terrified she's endangering them by speaking the teacher's name aloud. As weeks turn to months, Naoki's mental state deteriorates dramatically. He becomes convinced Moriguchi is watching his every move, manipulating events from afar. His only comfort comes from his growing hair and fingernails, physical proof he's still alive, despite feeling trapped in what he describes as a mental swamp. In a particularly disturbing incident, he cuts himself at a convenience store and deliberately smears blood on products, forcing his mother to purchase everything he's contaminated. The breaking point comes when Naoki learns that Shuya has been attending school all along, facing the consequences Naoki has been hiding from. Enraged at being the only one truly suffering, he finally confesses everything to his mother. But rather than offering the unconditional acceptance he expects, she repeatedly suggests he pushed Manami into the pool out of fear, refusing to acknowledge his true motive, proving himself superior to Shuya. In the devastating final scene, Naoki's mother approaches him with a kitchen knife, suggesting they should go see Grandma and Grandpa together, a murder-suicide pact, to end their suffering. When she apologizes for failing him, Naoki snaps. The word failure, the same insult Shuya hurled at him, triggers a violent rage. The chapter ends with the implied murder of his mother as Naoki watches her fall down the stairs, blood pooling beneath her head, while he remains trapped in a dissociative state, uncertain if everything has been a dream. Through Naoki's deterioration, we witness how Moriguchi's psychological revenge proves more devastating than any legal punishment could have been, destroying not just the guilty boy, but his entire family in the process. Behind Shuya Watanabe's meek exterior and scientific brilliance lurks a coldly calculating mind devoid of empathy. His first-person narrative reveals a chilling perspective on murder, not as a moral transgression, but simply the elimination of one entity for another's benefit, like a lion killing a gazelle. This clinical detachment stems from his upbringing by a mother he idolizes, a brilliant electrical engineering student who abandoned her promising career after marrying his unremarkable father and moving to their dead-end town. Shuya's involvement in Minami's death wasn't a childish prank gone wrong, but a deliberate experiment in murder. He meticulously designed the shock-delivering coin purse as a killing device and manipulated the insecure Naoki into helping target Moriguchi's daughter. When the little girl trustingly accepted their gift at the pool, Shuya felt intensified determination, seeing the smile of someone who had been well-loved, a love he believed he'd been denied when his mother abandoned him to pursue her career. When the shock rendered Minami unconscious rather than killing her outright, Shuya coldly walked away, assuming his plan had succeeded. He cruelly dismissed Naoki as worthless compared to his own genius, never imagining his accomplice would complete the murder by throwing the unconscious child into the pool. This unexpected development ruined Shuya's carefully constructed plan for notoriety, as the death was reported as an accidental drowning rather than the brilliant murder he'd engineered. Following Moriguchi's revenge announcement, Shuya's reaction differs dramatically from Naoki's. Rather than hiding, he attends school and stoically endures his classmates' torment, secretly elated about potentially having AIDS. He believes this diagnosis would finally bring his mother back to care for her dying son, the attention he's always craved. For 3 months, he endures increasingly violent bullying while awaiting test results, only to discover he's HIV negative and that Moriguchi had never contaminated the milk at all. This revelation doesn't break Shuya. It merely redirects his pathology. He begins a relationship with Mizuki, the class president, initially admiring her skepticism about Moriguchi's claims. But when she mentions her previous interest in Naoki and suggests testing chemicals on their teacher, Shuya becomes enraged at her perceived betrayal. In a moment of fury, he strangles her and hides her body in the laboratory refrigerator. His final plan involves planting a bomb at school, timed to detonate during an assembly where he's scheduled to receive an award for an essay ironically titled Life. 3 days before this planned massacre, Shuya visits his mother at K University, only to discover she has remarried his science fair judge and is pregnant with their child. His fantasy that she abandoned him to pursue scientific greatness shatters completely. She simply moved on with her life, effectively forgetting him. This devastating truth drives Shuya to his final act of violence. After reading his life essay to his class, he attempts to detonate his bomb by phone, only to receive a call from Moriguchi revealing she has disarmed it. His perfect crime, like his previous attempt, has been thwarted by the teacher he underestimated. In the final confrontation between Moriguchi and Shuya, the full scope of her intricate revenge plan finally comes to light. What appeared to be a simple act of psychological torture, convincing the boys they had contracted HIV, was merely the opening move in an elaborate chess game that spanned months. Moriguchi reveals that her late husband, Sakuranomi, had actually thwarted her original blood revenge plot, replacing the contaminated milk cartons out of ethical concerns. Despite his belief that the boys could be rehabilitated, she couldn't abandon her quest for justice. "Did you really think I would give up so easily?" she asks Shuya calmly. "That I would entrust my daughter's justice to the juvenile court system that would protect you? That I would simply walk away and let you both live without consequences?" Moriguchi explains how she meticulously orchestrated the events following her departure from the school. She manipulated Werther-sensei, Terada, a former student of her husband's who idolized him, into unwittingly becoming her instrument of torment against Naoki. She monitored Shuya's online activities, reading his disturbing love letter to his mother, and identifying his fundamental weakness, his desperate need for maternal validation. When Shuya murdered Mizuki for calling him a mama's boy, Moriguchi decided to take direct action. Her most devastating revelation comes last. She didn't just disarm his school bomb, she relocated it to Laboratory 3 at K University where his mother worked. The detonator remains connected, ensuring Shuya himself would trigger the explosion that would kill the mother he simultaneously worshipped and resented. "I've given you exactly what you wanted," she tells him with chilling finality. "The perfect opportunity to eliminate the person who has caused you the most pain, the one whose abandonment drove you to kill my daughter. You can finally make her notice you, permanently." As police sirens wail in the background, Moriguchi reveals this is her final act of vengeance. "I've had my fill of revenge," she says, almost gently. "Perhaps this will start you on the road to recovery." With these words, she walks away, leaving Shuya to face the consequences of his actions and the impossible choice she has engineered for him. In this masterful conclusion, Moriguchi emerges not as a grieving victim, but as the most calculating player in this tragedy. A woman whose understanding of human psychology allowed her to craft a punishment far more devastating than any legal system could provide. By forcing each boy to confront the darkest parts of themselves, she ensured they would suffer consequences tailored precisely to their specific crimes and psychologies. Moriguchi's revenge extends far beyond her intended targets, creating a devastating ripple effect that consumes innocent lives. Naoki's sister Kiyomi finds herself at the center of her family's implosion after her brother murders their mother. Reading her mother's diary, she discovers the woman had initially accommodated Naoki's withdrawal, but ultimately attempted a murder-suicide pact, believing this was the only way to end their shared suffering. "How did Dad miss everything?" Kiyomi wonders, realizing her father either pretended not to notice or was genuinely blinded by his own depression over Naoki's troubles. The family disintegrates completely. Her sister Mariko suffers a miscarriage from the stress, reporters circle their home like vultures, and Naoki remains locked in impenetrable silence. Despite everything, Kiyomi plans to give authorities her mother's diary, hoping it might somehow prove Naoki innocent, though this depends on finally understanding what was truly in his mind, an understanding that may never come. Meanwhile, Mizuho, the class representative, who initially appears to be a conscientious student, reveals her own disturbing obsessions. In her letter to Moriguchi, she confesses her long-standing infatuation with Naoki and her manipulation of both Shuya and their teacher Werther. She admits to suggesting that Werther's persistent visits pushed Naoki to violence against his mother, effectively making the well-intentioned teacher complicit in the tragedy. "What do you think of my revenge now?" she asks Moriguchi, revealing her plan to poison Werther if he returns after summer break. Her letter exposes how Moriguchi's actions have normalized revenge as an acceptable response to perceived wrongs, creating a dangerous new paradigm for impressionable students. Even Werther, who genuinely wanted to help his troubled students, becomes a victim of this cycle. When Mizuho tricks him into wearing Shuya's lie detector and confronts him about his motives for visiting Naoki, his self-serving intentions are exposed. He wanted to be seen as a heroic teacher rather than acting out of pure concern for his student. This public humiliation, coupled with the suggestion that his actions contributed to Naoki's violence, destroys his teaching career and self-image. Perhaps most tragically, Minami's father, already suffering from terminal illness, must watch as his daughter's death becomes the catalyst for a cascade of further tragedies. The HIV-positive man, who had already lost so much, becomes an unwitting instrument in Moriguchi's revenge plot when she claims to have used his blood to contaminate the boy's milk. His private suffering becomes public spectacle, his disease weaponized without his consent. Through these collateral victims, Confessions raises profound questions about the morality of revenge. Even when directed at those who deserve punishment, vengeance creates unintended victims and perpetuates cycles of violence. The novel forces us to consider whether justice achieved through revenge is justice at all, or merely another form of cruelty that transforms the avenger into something as monstrous as those they punish. At its philosophical core, Confessions explores a fundamental question: what creates a monster? Through its multiple narrators, the novel examines different perspectives on the origins of evil and the nature of moral responsibility, particularly in children. Shuya Watanabe represents the born this way argument, a child seemingly incapable of normal human empathy from birth. His clinical descriptions of murder as merely the elimination of one entity for another's benefit suggests a fundamental absence of moral compass. Yet his backstory complicates this view, revealing a childhood defined by maternal abandonment and desperate longing for recognition. His scientific brilliance, rather than being nurtured as a gift, becomes weaponized when combined with his emotional deprivation. "I just wanted someone to notice me," he confesses to Mizuho in a rare moment of vulnerability, suggesting his monstrosity might be an adaptation to profound neglect. Naoki Shitamura presents the opposite case, a seemingly normal boy corrupted by external influence. Initially portrayed as a passive follower manipulated by Shuya, his narrative reveals more complex motivations. His decision to drown Minami wasn't merely panic, but a twisted desire to succeed where Shuya had failed, transforming him from reluctant accomplice to deliberate murderer. His subsequent mental deterioration, the paranoia, delusions, and eventual matricide, raises questions about mental illness versus moral failing. Was he truly responsible for his actions, or had Moriguchi's psychological torture pushed an already fragile mind past the breaking point? Moriguchi herself embodies the most troubling question of all. Can righteous anger justify becoming the very monster one seeks to punish? Her elaborate revenge transforms her from victim to perpetrator, her methods arguably more calculated and cruel than the impulsive actions of the boys who killed her daughter. "I've had my fill of revenge," she tells Shuya in their final confrontation, suggesting her vengeance was as much about satisfying her own needs as seeking justice for Minami. The novel refuses simple answers to these questions, instead presenting a complex tapestry of perspectives on moral responsibility. Through its shifting narrators, it forces readers to continually reevaluate their judgments, sympathies, and understanding of evil. A character who appears monstrous from one perspective may seem tragically human from another. Actions that seem justified in one context become horrifying when viewed through a different lens. Perhaps most disturbingly, Confession suggests that the line between victim and perpetrator is thinner than we might like to believe. Each character moves fluidly between these roles: Moriguchi from grieving mother to calculating avenger, Naoki from bullied outcast to murderer, Shuya from neglected child to remorseless killer. This fluidity challenges our desire for clear moral categories, forcing us to confront the uncomfortable possibility that monstrosity exists as potential within everyone, requiring only the right circumstances to emerge. Confessions delivers a scathing critique of Japan's juvenile justice system and broader social institutions that fail to protect the vulnerable. Moriguchi's decision to pursue personal revenge rather than legal justice stems directly from her distrust of a system she believes would shield her daughter's killers rather than punish them appropriately. "I won't report you to the police," she tells her class, explaining that under Japanese law, the boys would likely receive minimal consequences due to their age. "You'd be protected as juveniles. Your names and faces wouldn't be revealed to the public. You might spend a couple of years in a detention facility with video games and counseling, then return to society with clean records and new identities. This isn't mere speculation. As a teacher, Moriguchi understands precisely how the system works and its limitations in addressing serious crimes committed by minors. The novel extends this critique beyond the legal system to other social institutions. Schools emerge as particularly ineffective at addressing bullying, psychological distress, and warning signs of violence. When Naoki withdraws from school, the system's response is bureaucratic rather than compassionate. Forms are filed, but no meaningful intervention occurs. His mother easily obtains a medical diagnosis of autonomic ataxia that excuses his absence without addressing its underlying causes. Even well-intentioned teachers like Werther lack the training or resources to help genuinely troubled students, their efforts often doing more harm than good. Families, too, fail in their protective function. Shuya's parents, a brilliant but absent mother and an ineffectual father, create the emotional vacuum that feeds his pathology. Naoki's parents miss the obvious signs of his deteriorating mental state until it's too late. Even Moriguchi herself, consumed by grief and revenge, arguably fails in her broader responsibility as an educator by using her classroom as the stage for her vengeance, traumatizing innocent students in the process. Through these institutional failures, Confessions raises profound questions about justice in modern society. When formal systems prove inadequate, is personal vengeance justified? Does Moriguchi's extrajudicial punishment of her daughter's killers represent justice denied or justice delivered? The novel offers no simple answers, instead presenting the messy, morally ambiguous reality of seeking justice in an imperfect world. Perhaps most disturbingly, the novel suggests that in the absence of effective formal justice, vigilantism becomes inevitable and potentially contagious. Moriguchi's revenge inspires Mizu to contemplate her own acts of vengeance against perceived wrongs, suggesting a dangerous normalization of personal retribution. This cycle mirrors real-world concerns about how institutional failures can lead to vigilante justice and further social breakdown. By examining these systemic failures through the lens of a deeply personal tragedy, Confessions delivers a powerful indictment of institutions that prioritize procedures over protection and bureaucracy over genuine care for the vulnerable. It forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions about what true justice looks like and who bears responsibility when formal systems fail to provide it.